human something. I like staying at home, but now that I have no choice but to stay at home, it's like, man, fuck this.
My life has not changed at all. So, you know, I'm good.
You thrive. This is your show. That's all you do.
These are the fucking loner Olympics, and I'm going for the gold. Man. So,
see, I'm different than you guys. I just hit my wall. I messed up my ankle yesterday for no apparent reason, and so now I'm icing my ankle while I can't move on the couch all day. It's really starting to get to me. Sam, you're the problem. You're the problem. Like, I've known this guy for like 5 years. So I was 23 when I first knew Sam. And every time as he gets older, I hear all this shit. Hangovers get worse. He's spraining his ankle for no reason. This concerns me, as now I'm in my late 20s.
He's turning into Al Bundy. It's funny. But,
watching 2000, the finals, game 7 from 2016, Al Bundy would never do that.
Yeah, that's true.
just gotta run back, what was it, like, game 3 versus Houston in 2015 when Steph went for 40. Just run that back on repeat.
I did just watch game 7 again. Yeah, that's still good.
Which, yeah, we there's one game 7 we don't talk about on this.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, I figured. All right, let's move on.
And with further ado, introducing us to our guest this week, Miles Brown. Miles, how you doing?
I'm inside. I'm doing my part.
You're not out there. God, the images you just see of people in the parks are just amazing. It's like they think social distancing is like looking at their phone when they're outside. Like, oh, see, I'm not talking to people. I'm not interacting.
I mean, most people are selfish or stupid. So, par for the course.
True. All right, I want to get to actually a little bit on that game 7. But for our listeners who don't know you, Miles, like, Andy and I've followed you for years. You're probably the funniest person who like chimes in once a day on NBA Twitter. And then I've read your work, be it from like Free Darko to GQ and stuff over the years. But
back in the day, Free Darko.
I feel like Free Darko is like your and my like prime of being into blogging, Andy.
Yeah, I remember that.
But what I was going to say is, Miles, for people who aren't familiar with you, give us a little background.
I don't know, man. I'm just a guy. I was in the right place at the right time. The internet started popping right when I decided I didn't want to get a real job, and I didn't have to. So, yeah, I covered the NBA for, I don't know, ESPN, Slam, GQ, True Hoop for a little bit. Had our own blog on there covering the Wolves out in Minneapolis. And yeah, now I work in advertising, just saving lives one fucking brief at a time.
Well, let's before we get, I have a question, because the first thing I think about, I don't know if this on the rundown, Sam, so I may be taking over here, but I'm very curious about when I first joined Twitter. This is how I felt, and I don't know about the listeners. Maybe some of the listeners are a little bit more, a little bit older. Some are going to be a little younger, so they don't know.
I mean, 100% of our listeners are too online. So whatever you're asking,
they're going to know Miles. They're going to know Miles on the. They'll like this podcast instead of just us dicking off usually, which is what we do. But when I first joined Twitter, I think back in like, I want to say 2010, 2011 ish, I got on Twitter like to actually learn stuff, to actually like talk about how teams play defense, maybe how, like, the maybe some psychoanalysis, some fake psychoanalysis. That certainly changed. I want to get your thoughts on just kind of like, how did you write about that then? Or what was your thought process then on how things were written about, how things were talked about, at least on Twitter or even in blogs?
Like around 2010?
Sure. Yeah, at least that was when I started. Yeah.
Word. I think I got in there around like 2008.
Yeah.
And it was, everything was new. You know, there was no other feeling for me personally other than just like excitement, you know? Because usually you're kind of cornered off in your little section of the world and you can only talk about the shit that you like with the people who like it around you, but they might not like it as much. They might not know as much. They might not be as curious, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, when you throw everybody in the pool like that, it was great. It was just like, oh shit, you know, I'd never considered this or I didn't know about that. It was fun. I really enjoyed it. And I happened to work with some good people. I spent a lot of time with Britt Robson covering the Timberwolves during like the worst time to cover the Timberwolves. I think it was like I started the year after KG left.
Is this the Michael Beasley era?
Yeah, the Al Jefferson, Sebastian Telfair, Kurt Rambis, Kevin Love era. And, you know, I mean, it was just interesting watching like a real actual pro find new ways to spark new discussions instead of just throwing his hands up every night, which is essentially what I was doing at first. Just like, this sucks. I want a good team. I want to talk about something fun. I can't keep finding new ways to discuss how somebody's losing. But, you know, eventually you decide, hey, I want to do well at this. You embrace that challenge, and he was a great guy to learn from. But as far as Twitter goes, I think I tried to put a lot of thought into what I wrote and take it seriously. So when I'm on Twitter, I didn't want to take anything seriously. And that's just where I went to just cock off, you know, just tell jokes.
Yeah.
Just say the most inappropriate thing, get a rise out of whoever. And it was more fun back then. You can't do that anymore. So, yeah, everything's different.
Oh, wow. We got a full awkward pause. I thought Andy was going to follow that up.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's your show.
I heard Miles say, just get a rise out of people, and I immediately thought, I just went back to the good times.
Yeah,
I always – what's that?
No, go ahead.
I always think we got a podcast that we're doing on a Saturday. We're running back 2016 Cavs Warriors. Listen, wasn't my idea, but
oh really? It wasn't the Warrior guys' idea to do a full pod series on the finals.
Fucking Christ! So anyway, we're doing it, and I look back at some of like the stuff that I said and some of the stuff that I tweeted back in 2015-16. I'm just like, my God! Some of the stuff I'm like, man, I wanted people to want to fight me. At that point, and that was the function of Twitter then. But that was also partly because the Warriors were so good, and the guys were so – they had so much fun and were so like – they weren't cocky in a way that wasn't them. So it just made it more fun to just be an asshole online. I don't even know where I was going with that point, but I think when you said that was – I immediately thought of that.
Actually, I want Miles' perspective on this. So they obviously just re-aired 2016 Game 7. Mm-hmm. The general feeling – and Miles is no Warriors fan, so he's not from the Bay Area or anything. So I kind of want – what was your perspective on that when it happened and kind of where are you with it now? Because the entire Bay Area was just in shock, and then it just turned into a whole thing afterwards. But I remember personally I was watching with my dad. It was Father's Day. And when Steve Kerr put in Festus Ezeli, I kicked the table so hard. And then I was good for the rest of the night.
So we're just talking about Game 7 right now?
Yeah. Oh, just like the whole thing. Because I feel like it gets kind of forgotten just how much of kind of a fever pitch the Warriors were from like the beginning of the rise to ultimately – choking away the finals in 16.
Yeah. I'm going to try and give you the thorough yet not too long answer.
Okay.
I never had more fun watching a basketball team than the Golden State Warriors. That it was just new. It was fresh. It was fun. It was clearly immediately going to change the game and the way everybody else played after that. And I think that was, what, the second season. They had just won the year before. They won the 73 games. It was exciting. They were too new to be sick of already, you know, kind of like a – and they didn't come together in some sort of controversial way like a Heat team. And everybody was still enjoying it. But then at a certain point, I don't remember like exactly where things turned, but it was just like, oh, okay, you liking this a little too much. And then it got around, because like Steph is a great guy. You know, nobody, I think the only thing he really gets banged for is, oh, you're not actually that humble, you're cocky on the court, which is like, all right, whatever. It's a goofy thing to argue about to me. But Draymond and the dick kicking is where I was like, all right, you guys are good. You guys are fun. I'm rooting for you. Don't do this. And I think, what did he do it to Steven Adams? He did it like five times that postseason until finally it turned me personally.
And I feel like it might have even started with the OKC game, the one where Steph hit the 40-foot shot. But like,
I love that.
The undercurrent of it was Draymond getting into a huge argument with Kerr.
Yeah. Yeah, like I guess I can never really pinpoint any particular time. But I know by the time Game 7 came, personally, I wanted to see something historic. As much as I enjoyed watching that team, I also wanted to see LeBron James get over the hump and do something to kind of balance the scales for a lot of the other moments in his career where people kind of poked at him, where it was just like, all right, you know, it was a classic setup. You had your one man against, you know, this great team in this unprecedented event. I picked my side. I was happy with the way things went, and I have been very unhappy with everything that has happened since then.
What do you mean?
I mean, that's when everything changed for me personally. Like KD going to Golden State, it changed the whole conversation. Just in terms of, no matter whether you think he had a right to or he was right to, like, whatever. The fact of the matter was, we all just kind of threw our hands up and threw away, just fucking punted 3 years of basketball. Just like, all right, they're going to win. It'll be fun sometimes. It'll be boring other times. But there's no mystery to the shit anymore.
So, the conversation around that, you know, if KD hadn't gone there, would have been like a it probably would have been a rivalry for another couple of years between the Cavs and the Warriors. You never know, but it probably would have been. Actually, might have been even Warriors and OKC.
Yes.
And then Warriors Cavs, actually.
Yes.
But, I mean, you said earlier you work in marketing, you work in advertising. I mean, when you say conversation changed, I'm curious how the conversation changed around, like, LeBron after that. Or the conversation changed around Kevin Durant. Or Steph Curry. Steph Curry, who kind of is not really even in that conversation anymore in 2020.
I mean, I look at it through the prism of LeBron, just because, you know, he kind of is the marquee guy. And sure. Things changed in the sense of, I think a lot of the goofy LeBron fanboyism and the goat shit that you see, that's just like, it's not even like good faith conversation. I think a fair percentage of that comes from the fact that, like, some people feel like he got robbed for those 3 years where we didn't get to see two teams shoot a fair one and figure out who was better, where we could actually appropriately gauge somebody who was being called the greatest player of all time, or at least in consideration. Mm-hmm. Where would you guys go? 3-1 on those?
Yeah.
Say you go 2-2 and LeBron James has four titles. Say he gets three off somehow. Improbable, but worth discussing. Then you have legitimate conversations about this guy and, you know, his stature in terms of the modern era versus a Michael Jordan. Now it's all just, it starts to sound like excuses and conjecture, but it's because we didn't get to go down that road and find out what would have actually happened.
Yeah, no, I hadn't even thought about that. I mean, I guess when you're busy celebrating as a Warriors fan, you don't think about that shit.
Andy just got sober this year when Steph finally got hurt. So that's a different
really big wake-up call. Really big wake-up call.
You guys had a good run. I'm sure anybody would trade for it. But, you know, now you got what you got.
Jordan Poole, you're not a – come on, man.
I don't go to that school anymore.
Did you go – did you – you went to Michigan?
No, I just mean, like, I don't keep up with Warriors basketball as much as I used to.
So Steph played one game, and he looked just about ish the same old Steph. So, you know, I mean, we're not here to talk about next season, but you may want to jump back on.
Well,
if next season happens. Yeah, if next season happens, we'll see.
Yeah, one breath at a time there, you know.
Yeah. Well, so let's get to that. So, I mean, Warrior fans are going to feel like whatever. That's your problem, not mine. But, all right, KD left in last summer. How do you feel? Do you feel like the NBA has gotten rebalanced? Like, let's put the fact that the season had to be put on hold because of a global pandemic, which no one could predict, but you can add that to the list of reasons LeBron doesn't have six titles.
Some of our friends at ESPN might, but personally won't do that.
But I mean, so we've sorry, I had to. We've come out of this era where it's like, you know, the Warriors are overwhelming favorites, and like you look at the Vegas odds, and they're like 1-4, and everyone else is like 10-1. Do you feel like the NBA is actually moving back to a direction of some sort of competitive balance? Because this year's, I mean, we've been watching a G League team, so I don't know that we have the best perspective on it.
Well. I mean, that's what I was so excited about this summer, and that's why I was really happy with Kawhi and his decision, is that he could have really fucked things up all over again if he would have, you know, chosen to go to a team that made things inevitable all over again.
You mean the Lakers?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And he didn't, and that made me excited, and so far it seemed like things were at least playing out towards the top where there was no clear favorite. Everybody had their argument for whomever, but we didn't know. That's why we were going to play the game. And if Steph and KD and Kyrie weren't injured, you might even have a few more teams up there at the top kind of jousting for things. And yeah, I think we're as close as we are or have been, at least over what, you know, the last 20, 25 years to, I don't know who's going to win. I just want to see what happens.
25 years. Whew.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm old now, so I have that kind of frame of reference.
That's no. I mean, can you imagine if Steph was playing? So you got Steph, you got LeBron, you got Kawhi, and then you got KD versus Giannis in the East. Yeah, that would have been.
Yeah.
Like that would have been. That would have been. Like I probably you couldn't pick anyone. Like everybody would probably have similar odds. Like you could see. You could probably see the Nets beating. The Bucks, you could see the Warriors beating the Lakers or vice versa, or the Clippers winning and like, yeah.
Anything could happen. I mean, a lot of those teams are so evenly matched and kind of have such identifiable flaws to pick at that, yeah, you split two games and then, you know, that fifth game, who knows? Then you take it from there.
Sam and I make a lot of jokes about Giannis, by the way, about how like, well, actually, I may make more jokes about how the NBA doesn't talk about Giannis. You think that's accurate? You think I'm full of shit?
Well, when you say the NBA, who are we talking about? Like the media or, you know, just like corporate promotion or?
I think it goes both ways, actually. Like, I think Andy's partially implying like the flagship media partners of the NBA, but also just like in general, I don't know that he doesn't evoke the emotion that Steph did. Or
is he the next KD then? That's the problem, isn't it then?
No, but KD, am I wrong in saying like KD had a larger, what's the word I'm looking for? People were more aware of KD in OKC as like the next big thing than maybe the average sports fan is with Giannis.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he has a few things working against him. Just one, you could say Milwaukee, but like you said, you know, you were just talking about OKC. I think it's mostly just that he is a big, and bigs don't get that kind of love. We like the guys, whether, you know, regardless of size, I think the distinction between him and Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant can put the ball on the floor. He can take two dribbles and he can pull up in the mid-range, which makes him a more dynamic scorer, which is a more harder thing to guard and a more enjoyable thing to watch. So I think a lot of those things go into it. I don't know what the fuck is going on over at ESPN. They're bugging right now. A lot of the conversation just seems so catered towards Twitter when Twitter is the wind. And I don't know why they keep trying to build on that. But yeah, it's just been a lot of the same conversations ad nauseum. And for some reason, he doesn't fit into that.
What's the model that, I mean, what is the model? I'm always yelling at Sam in the text about like different ways, like, or Sam's doing it to me where it's like, what should they be talking about to essentially maybe promote the league more, maybe talk about guys like Giannis more, maybe Luka Doncic more, maybe just kind of anybody outside of the same old. I just went on Twitter and I saw another MVP conversation. Miles, and it's just the same shit we've heard since 2012. I already know the talking points. You could get up there and do it. And so what can they do?
I think that that's where it's on the league, where they really need to stop. I mean, I understand the instinct where they were just like, hey, social media is the future. It's the best way for us to corral all of our friends into one group. And we can even put this goofy-ass commodified hashtag on them. NBA Twitter, where everything happens. The problem is then you're essentially, you know, for lack of a better phrase, you're letting the inmates run the asylum. And all those people, you know, we talked about in the beginning where those goofy ass friends that you had to talk about basketball with because there was no internet. Now they're all on the internet. And the interesting thing about like a Twitter or a social media in general is you like to think it's a meritocracy. Where, you know, every voice has its fucking talking points and everybody's words matter. They don't. A lot of these people are just saying shit just to get attention. And when the entire model of the medium is attention seeking, then you're automatically not having good conversation because everybody's inherently selfish, where it's just my point matters more. My joke is funnier. My meme is great. Because everyone wants to be the star of the show rather than actually just watching the show.
Yeah, definitely. And that's where I can't figure out what the end game is to get out of it other than to go the NFL route where there's literally zero attention paid to that. And it's just like, I mean, the NFL... I get into this conversation with people. Do people geek out on NFL strategy because they all play Madden and they all like think they're de facto coaches? Or is it just because it's been presented to us that way that we just kind of, we engage in the conversation around it that way because that's the way it's been presented to us for my whole life?
Well, Katie talked about top blocking last postseason. He said top blocking, which is not really a novel concept, but like people ran with it. I felt like that was pretty cool, even though it was something like not,
even though it was a complete lie for why he scored, what was it, 7 points against the Clippers?
He's always lying. What he does.
After that, he scored 50 points in like every game. It was a nice little diversion.
I mean, I think the inherent difference between the NBA and the NFL is, you know, it's kind of the one we all know, where one guy, you know, can change things a lot more. And that inherently just kind of shifts the way you have the conversation about the two sports, where you kind of have to be more of a strategist. You need to understand all of the working pieces. And it's about the whole in the NFL. In the NBA, it's just about this one guy and whether he can carry you and be the whole. So that's where, again, I think it's on the NBA to say, hey, you know, social media, people are always going to have those conversations. It's good for the game. We like, you know, to have a little controversy around things. But we need to make sure that we're doing our best to actually educate and inform our fans. You know, whether it's actually, remember those like Red Auerbach things or the fucking Czar the Telestrator, just my entire life, or at least, you know, a good span of it. There was always somebody out there like trying to teach you and to show you that, hey, this game isn't actually just as simple as you think it is. Now, we almost lean into that. And it does everybody a disservice because then you end up having just these really circular and rudimentary conversations that ain't about shit.
I do remember there was a lot of scouting or at least a lot of video and a lot of just analysis, at least when I first started online. That's pretty much gone by the wayside now. I think most things, at least from a high level, like with a lot of people watching first take and that type of stuff, it won't be around that. I'm watching some of the NFL. I remember watching this season. I was watching Dan Orlovsky. It's like a trash quarterback. Somehow he has a job on like ESPN Live. But like his job is solely to sit there and just analyze plays. And I'm sure he's not the smartest guy, but he's smarter than all of us combined, at least from an NFL perspective. And so I found
it'd be like if Dell on TV breaking down pick and roll coverages for us.
But it's still, I found it fascinating. Well,
I mean, it just reminds me of something interesting. And you guys know Wright Thompson, right?
Yeah.
Like back when I was writing more and, you know, I was reading more, I read this thing from Wright Thompson and it always stuck with me, where he talked about how he wanted to write about sports, but he had to acknowledge that, God damn it, I don't know anything about sports. This is a lot more complicated than I think. And he consciously made the decision to say, you know what, then I'm going to pivot and I'm going to make sure that I can control what I do know. And that's where he became, you know, a masterful profile writer, where he acknowledged what he knew, what he didn't, what he was good at, what he wanted to actually get out of something. And he was intent on contributing to the conversation. And I think what we see now with a lot of this social media shit is we've built a cottage industry on bullshit, where everybody can just pretend that they actually do know something, when in actuality, you know, just about 6 to 8 basic questions will show none of us know shit. And if we could just admit that, then we could have more productive conversations together rather than just competing with each other about like nothing.
Yeah. How about ex-players? How about, because then I find that to be also a lot different between the NBA and really any other sport, not even football. Well, I'm talking about baseball, where guys talk about the sport.
And you got like Alex Rodriguez, who had the reputation for being pretty egotistical. He's like on broadcast now, like breaking down guys' swings, like he was a nothing player or something.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that goes back to a lot of these guys that we're talking about. They used to be the man, you know,
right?
Whether we're talking about like a Charles Barkley or a Scottie Pippen or a Paul Pierce or a Tracy McGrady. And it's a guy who he feels like, hey, you know, you change these rules in my favor. I come in here and I play this sport. But at the same time, you know, the other hand of it is, dog, like that was your time and your time is gone. And this time is now. And instead of talking about how shitty it was compared to what you did, you need to, you know, be tasked with finding the good in these things. But then once you sink to the level of, you know, just these fucking water carrying clowns like Kendrick Perkins, then that's where I don't even understand what the purpose of the conversation is anymore. Is it just to create tweets? If that's the case, then like I'm good.
Just chasing that viral content.
That's really it is. Just chasing a couple thousand likes, and we'll get more into it. Let me do an ad read real quick. We'll get more into it. We're doing Bet Online this week. We're still doing Bet Online. So there's no NBA, no hockey, no baseball. So you might think there's nothing to bet on. You'd be wrong. So our exclusive partner, BetOnline.ag, sells hundreds of sports, events, and games to wager on, or let them bring Vegas to you with their online casino and blackjack. So it's all open 24 hours a day for the scumbags and degenerates that got nothing else to do. It's all online, including their $750,000 poker series. Sometimes I see Sam texting me at 4 a.m. He's up. He's throwing money in. The mortgage, all of it. If you're into props and entertainment betting,
I'm up right now. We can talk about that later.
Of course you are. Only telling me the wins, never the losses. But you can still bet. You can actually bet on Survivor, Big Brother. I know Sam's wife always makes him watch American Idol. Stock prices and even the weather. Visit the website and join today to receive 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Be sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE. Bet Online, your online wagering experts.
Online poker is, we'll get into that another time. So you're talking about, so former players, I do feel like it's a, there's a lack of direction with them, because I get the perspective most of them would probably dial it back if they were ever told you need to promote the sport more than just kind of freelance your opinion. Yes. And I guess I want to take this back to, so you've watched the NBA longer than me and Andy, which is a fancy way of me calling you older than us.
It happens. It'll happen to you.
it's in the process. But so I guess, how have you seen the league change in the way it's been covered since kind of the height of Jordan to now, going through all the eras? I think it's kind of fun to go back on it. I was looking at a post that said the 50 highest rated sporting events of the 2010s, and there wasn't a single NBA game in there, which kind of shocked me. I figured at least the 2016 Game 7 we referenced would be in there. But a lot of this, in my opinion, really goes back to the NBA coverage changed when they went from NBC to ABC ESPN. Yeah, I'm kind of just rambling at this point. So I guess my question for you, Miles, is kind of how have you seen the coverage evolve? I don't even know if evolve's the right word.
I mean, yeah, I'm not sure what the right word is either, just because, like, I grew up on Michael Jordan, you know, and that was, I got Sports Illustrated, I got Sport Magazine. Those are your national publications. You got your local paper, your Sun-Times, your Tribune, and you got, you know, your local coverage. That was it, other than like seeing the game on NBC on Friday. So the narratives were all very like top line. There was no strategy. There was not a lot of, you know, like fluff or personality or any of that shit. It was just like, we're playing games. We're looking good. Let's go. Around like, everything was just super siloed. And then in around like, I don't know, I want to say like 03, 04, around that Lakers time, that's when, you know, ESPN and TNT started to get a bit bigger. And those kind of personalities started to emerge. You know, that was around when Charles started doing TV, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he got out there, he was doing his thing. And that's where I feel the genesis of a lot of, you know, the hot take shit or the dare to be different motherfuckers are coming from. I want to be Charles Barkley, but when everybody's being Charles Barkley, then you're not Charles Barkley. You're just another cranky old man. And that's essentially the problem. But again, I think it's Twitter. I think it's social media that really changed the discourse, because we, in good faith, initially decided it was the voice of the fan. And we have to listen to the fan until we realize, you know what, the customer isn't always right. Sometimes the customer is just a fucking asshole.
Well, usually the customer is wrong, actually.
Yes.
Usually it's a customer.
The good faith thing is actually right point, because like Andy mentioned it earlier, and it's absolutely true. Everyone got online and was like, oh, this is really fun, and I can have these nuanced conversations. And then slowly everyone becomes a troll. I mean, it's just kind of like you're incentivized by it. It's part of, you know, humanity that just kind of like pushes you towards kind of wanting the affirmation you get from like the attention. But anyway, now we have Kendrick Perkins on TV.
Yeah, it just sucks, because I used to be a lot more motivated about learning. And now it's like I almost avoid these conversations as often as possible, because they're just not friendly. They're not, you know, again, in good faith, it's everything is so competitive. The whole model is attention-seeking behavior. And it's just like, why do you think you're more important than the thing that they actually put on TV?
I think the high end of this, the pinnacle of this, was Kevin Durant just being online and making it known to people that he was not happy with just whatever it was that he wasn't happy with, but he was just online with it at all times. Everybody's going to be online, but he, I think, was like the epitome of Twitter affecting.
I supported that. You know, I think my thing was like, you should be able to say some shit back. Especially, you know, in these days and times when you don't have to be as worried about your brand. You got 300 M's from Nike in the bank. You can pop off at the mouth whenever you want to. But the problem was, is it was the right delivery, but kind of the wrong messenger. Just because he as much as he wanted to be, you know, aggressive and correcting people or having conversation, whatever you want to call it, he would never be fully honest with himself about what happened in Golden State, about how, why he got there and why he left. So it's like you can't be Mr. Truth to Power if you won't talk about the two things that everybody really actually wants to. So if he would have gone all the way with it, I think maybe we could have turned a corner. But if anything, these last couple weeks or months or whatever have really reaffirmed for me that we're never going back. Like, Kobe dropped dead and we're in the middle of a global pandemic and the game just shut down and we still are acting like assholes. Okay. What's going to stop it?
Yeah. Change.
You said KD wasn't honest with himself. Give me your theory then. I mean, I think I I know exactly what you're going to say. By why I wasn't honest, by why I went to Golden State. But why do you think?
I remember he was, at least there was a report, you know, I wasn't in the fucking room, sure, that he was concerned about how he would be seen. You know, because, I mean, sure, LeBron going to Miami was still pretty fresh in his mind. And I don't want to be hated. I want to win. I like you guys. I'd love to play our kind of basketball together, but what's the point if everybody's going to fucking hate me? And one way or another, you know, everybody's just like, oh, no, no, no. And I think the thing he didn't realize was maybe he thought, oh, well, fuck it. They'll hate all of us. But they didn't. They just hated him because the Warriors had already got, you know, a chip and 73 wins off on their own. He was the one who was seen as bandwagon jumping. He got the brunt of that, you know, just rancor or whatever you want to call it. And I'm sure it fucked with him, you know, just because he really does at his core just seem like somebody to me who just wants to play basketball and continue getting better and win. And I really respect that about him. Yeah. And I wish that he would have done anything else that would have let us just fully appreciate that instead of this being the headline on his career, you know?
Yeah, I think that's – do you remember when LeBron went to Miami in the first season? He was, like, trying to be a villain.
Yeah.
Like, his whole – yeah.
And I think that was the same thing with him where
– yeah.
I mean, I understand why these guys do these things under the circumstances where it's just like, yo, if I don't do this now, I may never win anything. And I'd rather win and be hated than look back as be a loser. I understand that kind of pressure and what it would produce. And I understand when people hate you for it, then you're like, fuck, well, now I got to really lean in and just be the hated guy.
Yeah.
But that means you need to be the honest guy, too. Otherwise, you're just giving people more reasons to hate you.
Yeah, and I think it also revealed interesting, like, obviously, year one with the Warriors for KD was their high water mark in terms of basketball and it was kind of for nothing in some ways. Like, everyone in the Bay Area is going to look at it and revere it, but it was the inevitable outcome to the rest of the world, and it kind of speaks to people. I don't know if they really care about watching the sport as much as they want the drama around it. So it's kind of like the full circle. Like, it's he did exactly what we expected him to do in the Warriors system and with this team. And, you know, he didn't leave anything on the table in terms of like, oh, he's not actually as good as we thought he was. No, it was the opposite. He's absolutely as good as we thought he was. But it was the fact that, you know, it felt predetermined that probably got to people.
I think it was also just the way, at least personally, the way that it happened, where like Kevin Durant finals MVP, he got two, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't remember which one it was, but it still just kind of burned in my brain just the image of Stephen Curry like in the corner and like three dudes running to making sure that he doesn't cut baseline, he doesn't curl over the top, and his man is still just sitting on top of him. And that just leaves fucking Kevin Durant to pick on Kevin Love from the elbow. And he's just jab-stepping him, and he's faking him, and he's up-faking him, and then he's dunking on him, and it's like, of course you're going to look like the finals MVP when everybody's concerned about stopping this other guy. And you leave like an all NBA player just free to roam against a horrible defender. Yeah, he's going to put up numbers. But again, that just goes back to dishonest conversations and Steph never winning a finals MVP it's weird how these are the ways that we choose to talk about sports now when everybody knows this shit, man. Like the biggest Curry hater, the biggest Warriors hater, they know that shit. But it's just like, this is what gets retweets. This is what's funny. This is, you know, the wound that I can pick at.
Well, it goes the other way too. And it's like, you hear that as a Warriors fan and you're like, well, you know that LeBron's, you know, he's pretty damn good.
Yeah, we're,
you
know, to say the least. Warrior fans are trying to pick up the mantle of Kobe online fans in the late 00s.
I was one of those.
But it actually does. I want to take this back to basketball and take it to the Warriors here. Where does Steph's career go from here? I think this is actually like beyond the fact that we're obviously Warrior guys. It is kind of interesting. Like he had one of like, I mean, what's comparable to what Steph meant to the sports community from 14 to 16? Like there's like Jordan and Kobe and like LeBron's rise are maybe the only ones that like,
I don't even think, because this one, it came out of nowhere. You saw them coming. They were heralded from the minute, you know, that we could legally cover them.
Right.
This guy was right under our nose the whole time. And it was just like, holy shit. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't watch other sports, so I can't make that kind of comparison.
Sure.
But the thing that comes to mind is like, it's the most casual football watcher, I would say like a Patrick Mahomes, where you're just like, oh shit, I didn't know you could play football like that. A no-look pass from a quarterback? What are you doing?
Right.
You know, it was that kind of excitement from a completely unforeseen guy.
So now he's 32. The Warriors are injured. I mean, I don't know where they're going. I've talked myself into Wiggins. maybe I'll get your opinion on that afterwards. But like, what do we where does his career go from here? I guess is my question.
How old is he now?
He turned 32 less than a week ago.
Yeah, a week ago.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, honestly, like my first thought is I don't know how to think about basketball anymore, particularly since hearing like, you know, the cap is about to go down to like Walmart low. And I don't know how teams build anymore. But, you know, before all this shit happened, I was still very optimistic where, you know, you get Klay back out there, you get Steph back out there, you've got the two greatest shooters of all time. And you got Wiggins. That's going to create open opportunities for him. Can he capitalize on them? And because the thing about him that I never believed in, and he still hasn't improved enough, he can't dribble to get to the spots that he likes quickly and consistently enough, and he can't create for anybody else quickly or consistently enough when like
he won't be doing either of those here,
right? Yeah. And that's what you kind of need that guy to do is, oh shit, double team, swing it around, make the open three, or drive and kick to another guy. And like, I just don't know if he has those kind of instincts, and I don't know if Minnesota is the best place to judge him for that shit, considering there's nobody there to foster those kind of instincts. So we'll see.
Yeah, we got to see maybe 15 minutes of them playing together because Steph literally came back for one game, then he got the flu, and then the pandemic happened. And in that one game, you saw kind of, okay, so if he doesn't have to handle the ball because you have Steph and Draymond kind of being the lead facilitators, he can be somewhat effective cutting off them. But then you're getting back to what you're saying, where he's essentially doing what Harrison Barnes did, and you'd kind of want a little more out of their role.
Yeah, I mean, because everything I judge him on is based on that check. And if he was Harrison Barnes and like making 2015 Harrison Barnes money, then yeah, whatever, you know, you get what you pay for. But it's like, nigga, like how deep in the tax are we over you? and I can't count on you from night to night. That's going to be weird. But again, it's going to depend on how they fill out the rest of those pieces. Because, you know, I'd like to think my joke will stand and him and LaMelo Ball will end up in Milwaukee and it won't matter. But, you know, one day at a time.
It is a joke, Miles, but might not be a joke. It might.
I mean, that's the funnier jokes, you know, is where you're just like, that might happen. Yeah,
it might actually happen. Though maybe they'll talk about Giannis now. You know, maybe Steph will take another hit on the shoe sales and the Finals MVP numbers, and maybe he'll.
That would be the most interesting thing to me, because like I, as much as I like what he's done for Milwaukee and him doing his thing there, I, you know, like the idealist in me would want to see him finish his story there. I also want to know what would happen if he went to Golden State and like America was like, all right, we get to do this again. You know, like the first time when it was no KD, it was, you know, just a revelation. Everybody, you know, just caught the spirit and enjoyed the game. Second time, everybody, you know, just really hated them. So now that third time, if Giannis is there surrounded by the two best shooters ever, and you're automatically a contender as soon as you sign the contract, I would want to see how people treat that, considering, nobody cared about Giannis before.
Yeah, I would be fascinated to see how Giannis would react, because he's probably like, he's seen what happened to KD. So and KD, I think, was kind of a little naive to think like, well, if I win a championship and I prove I'm the best player, they're going to like me. Like he thinks he's like another LeBron. Like he thought he could kind of do that thing, and it didn't happen. And I think with Giannis, he probably, I don't know. Like he wants to go to Golden State. I don't know if he is that naive though.
I think there's two things. Is one, like people don't think of him on that level. So then that's what makes me wonder, like, well, would you get mad at somebody that you up to that point didn't even fucking care about? You know, like it can't be unfair now. Then it's like, if it's so unfair, then why didn't you care about this guy this whole time?
You can't do good faith conversations like that, though. Right. You know,
of course. Yes. You know. So then the other thing is, I don't know. I forgot the other thing. But I think it would be fun. I think he's what, like 26? 5?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's 25.
Like you could ride that out for a while. The only thing to me, that was the other thing, is he seems to be a very proud person. I think he's very proud of what he's done on his own, so to speak. And he wouldn't want to be seen as weak. He strikes me as that kind of guy. You know, especially considering his whole story and how he started to where he is now, to get that fulfillment, that championship glory, just by, you know, taking the easy way out, so to speak.
Yeah.
I think he might see it like that. And that would be the thing that pride would be the thing that gets in the way.
Yeah. That would be, I mean, KD's kind of similar too. Like it wasn't like KD was. He's similar in that way too, but it's just it got to him, and I think because I find it hard to believe that he ever saw any of this coming. I'm talking about Durant, and that's the sucky part where you saw it affect him in real time, and I guess you saw it with LeBron a little bit. You saw some stuff affect him in real time, but I mean we're just like normal. We're normal dudes. When you see stuff affect these guys in real time, that's crazy. It's just like watching a finals game live. I've seen like LeBron, I've seen Steph, I've seen those guys like get a little bit rattled just in a finals game, just cause it's a finals game. And you're like, oh shit, these guys are human.
Yeah. I mean, KD's just an interesting case because it was such a singular case. Like the LeBron thing, I remember in 2011 or whenever that was, he went there. I think it was then. I was mad. 2010. Yeah, I was mad. I think most people were mad, and it wasn't just because he didn't go to my team or whatever. It's like, yo, I want to see something compelling, and I don't think this is going to be compelling. In hindsight, it was, because what, they go 2-2?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, it wasn't as easy as we thought it was going to be, so I don't hold on to that as much anymore. The KD thing, we were at a pivotal moment in NBA history, whether it's the whole LeBron thing that we talked about, or just the possibility of, you know, that OKC and Golden State rivalry. Because, like, I hold to this day, if OKC would have won that series, they would have beat the shit out of the Cavs.
I agree. I 100% agree.
And then, does he go anywhere?
See, I disagree with you both on that one.
Really?
I, d- you really want me to trust Russell Westbrook game 5, 6, 7 against the LeBron team? Like they would have been the better team the first 3 to 4 games. I go back to Russell Westbrook holding the ball.
Yeah, but they were just bigger. They were big and fast. Like Adams, Ibaka, like those guys would have beat the crap. Tristan Thompson was an X factor that series. He would have been wiped the fuck out against.
And OKC. I mean, if I remember right, if KD would have gone back to OKC, Al Horford would have signed with them.
That's right.
That was the rumor.
So that's right. If you roll out Westbrook, KD, Adams, and Al Horford, I mean, like the Cavs weren't that good defensively.
No.
Like you're coming at them from too many angles. You're putting too much pressure on them if you are using your roster in an ideal way. And I think they overwhelmed them. I mean, like, who's Kevin Love going to guard?
Apparently, he can guard Steph at the three-point line.
Who's Kyrie Irving going to guard, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with that. That's also why Iguodala has also said, like, that was the toughest series that they played. Was the toughest team that they played.
I would have to rack my mind to think of a more physically overwhelming, impressive
Warriors
team. They look tiny.
They look small. They look slow. They got bailed out by two dudes that just don't fucking miss.
Game 6, Clay. That was the craziest thing I've still ever seen.
We're going to do a live rewatch on that one. But that's just they were showing that game, and he had that shot where he had the ball, like, I want to say 4 feet behind the three-point line, and Russ just is standing there like doing his usual stupid defense stuff. He's just standing there, and Clay just looks at him, pauses, and just chucks that shit from, like, 26 right over the head of Russ. And you're just like, yeah, that's why the Warriors are better, I guess.
Clay is just – It's hard not to like and respect that dude. He's just a fucking dog. He's a competitor, and he goes home and he smokes his weed and he plays with his dog and he kisses his girlfriend and he comes back out and he does it all over again. That's it. That's his life. And I salute that guy.
I think we're just all envious of just finding that much contentment and just that much simplicity. I'd just like to be able to shoot like that.
Yeah, it's just wild how he's maximized himself considering, I mean, the guy moves like a fucking marionette. Like, he counts his dunks, you know? Like, he's not just this blazing athlete.
He tore his ACL trying to dunk too much.
Yes. And he still will... He's the best catch-and-shoot player ever. And, I mean...
Yeah.
You never know when he might just—he scared me more than Steph sometimes.
Yeah, we have a thing in Warrior where we say that a hot Steph, at least him, a hot Klay Thompson, gets more hot than a hot Steph, and that's just—it's about the craziest thing that you can imagine.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, because you can't put a long, rangy wing to eventually just kind of turn him into a decoy option because he'll get a shot off against anyone.
Anybody, he's big. You forget how big he is.
Well, that's kind of why we're a little bullish on the Warriors, at least for the next few seasons, and thinking that a window is relatively open. I mean, I don't think we have any – we don't think that Andrew Wiggins is going to be any more than he is, I think. But I think even so, at least you would hope Draymond maybe can figure out how to shoot 30% from three at some point.
He's the one who worries me.
Just Jesus. I don't know if you've watched him this season, by the way. It's just
I saw enough.
One game. That's all I need.
Nah,
he showed up on Christmas.
That was, I don't know what to call that. Like, if I were in Takesville, it would just be player empowerment gone bad. Where this guy was just basically like, yo, if ain't nobody else here, I don't want to be here. And he just kind of kicked it all year. And it's like, all right, dude, but... I don't know. I mean, I'm not an elite athlete, so I don't know how that goes. Where, like, can you really just dog it for a whole season and then just bounce back when you need to? I don't know. We're going to find out.
Well, hey, actually, I'm trying to think of a comp, and the only players I can think of are guys who do that, then they end up getting traded, and that reignites them. I can't really think of anyone who's done it and then stayed on the same team.
Yeah, like, it's the circumstances where, like, you know why he's doing it. And as soon as these other guys come back and the group holds each other accountable, he won't do it. But, like, that's just saying, you know, oh, I'm going to eat what I want during this quarantine. And, you know, I'll snap back for summer body as soon as we can go outside again. Nah, dog, it don't work like that.
That's not how it works. That's not.
Tell Sam that. Good thing. This motherfucker. No. Hey, you talked about player empowerment. I can't believe we didn't bring this up. But I didn't watch basketball in the 90s. I was like 5 years old. But was that a thing in the 90s? I asked that kind of knowing the answer. But like, how's that changed over the years? Like, is this a good thing? Maybe not. Should Adam Silver do something? Would David Stern do something about this shit? Where you just be like, yo, cut the shit. Where you guys are playing. Like, this Kawhi stuff where he's playing 25 games a season. Nobody gives a crap about the Clippers, but like they're probably the title favorites. Like what is all this stuff? Like, is this stuff even good for the future of the NBA? I don't even know how they can fix it.
I think it bothers me because a lot of it is built on that. That was Sam, wasn't it, who called NBA Twitter the white guilt industrial complex?
Yes,
yes. I still love the shit out of that because it's very true. And it's what allows guys to get away with a lot of greasy shit where a LeBron James should seize all the power that he can, particularly, you know, when he's playing for a greaseball like, what's his name, Dan Gilbert?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, milk that guy. I don't care. Get yours. You've earned that. You deserve it. But when you start to frame these things in players versus owners, and it's always young black men versus old white billionaires, then it becomes very easy for, you know, people like me and other liberally minded progressive people on Twitter.com to make their choices. But once we've allowed that to happen, and then everything is, you know, for the good, the players start to act like owners. Where, I'm sorry, I just don't see the difference. In, because like it's about power. Whether an owner has the power, a GM has the power, or the player has the power, somebody has to feel the effects of that power. And it's generally other players. Where, oh yeah, you know what? Pack up your family and get the fuck out of here. Whether it's my GM, my owner, or my teammate doing that to me, it happened to me. Why should I feel better that it happened from one of us, you know? Like, that doesn't move me. So on a top line level, like, I think a guy like LeBron has earned every right to, you know, try and squeeze as much as he can out of things. But there used to be a system that would keep somebody honest. And now we've kind of built the system to herald the fact that this guy can squeeze everything he can out of something. And it's just like, our players are empowered and they're socially conscious and they're the fucking, you know, they're all of these great things.
Well, and it comes down to accountability. Like you said, if it's like a traditional power structure, the GM can, you know, for lack of a better word, like be a dick, but if they start losing, he's fired.
Right.
Whereas, you know, like, I'm just gonna pick someone like James Harden. I have no indication he, you know, is playing this like 3D game of chess with moving his teammates around, but like, he could do that. He could be wrong. Someone's still gonna give him a max contract because there's only like five dudes who can do what he can do in the league anyway.
Yep.
So it leads to like a system of no accountability. I guess the accountability inevitably comes if the league starts losing money, which may start happening.
Yeah, I think we're there.
Yeah, but it's like, I mean, it is the same thing because it's, you know, you're just kind of trying to sell people that they're doing it right instead of just studying moves the way they should be.
Well, nobody, I think the thing was, yeah. It's like, you know, when you had a David Stern and, you know, you hear about how he ruled shit with an iron fist, I think that a lot of it was because he had to. And right. I, in hindsight, especially, a lot of the things that he did were for the good of the game because he was trying to build the game to the point where we could do the dumb shit that we do now. And so then it's hard to judge him and an Adam Silver under the same, you know, set of circumstances.
Right.
But if David Stern was still in charge right now, I don't think I think he wouldn't have it just because he would realize whether it was his ego that was offended or, you know, his delicate sensibilities, fine. But I think overall probably he would recognize this isn't good for the product where we're making, you know, our league's branding more about what our guys do off the court than on it.
That also like the couple thousand, 100,000 people on Twitter that are all about it are different than most guys that just watch basketball for basketball. I think a lot of my friends watch hoops just for hoops, and they don't really watch hoops for whether this millionaire is kind of running his own business. Like, nobody really gives a shit. Like, he's rich anyway. You know, and it's kind of, that's how most people feel.
Yeah, I was talking with my uncle about this. This is where it really hit me. He was asking me what Iguodala was doing. And I'm like, oh, he got traded. Oh, where's he play? Oh, he's holding out. Yeah. Oh, but, he's getting $16 million. So he gets paid to not play?
Twitter loved it.
And I was trying to explain, like, well, you know, he doesn't want to be there and he's trying to get traded. And like, so why are they paying him? And that was about the point I went. And I was like, hey, you know, uncle, I'm going to get a glass of wine. But
I think, again, it goes back to, you know, at least to some degree. I don't want to say all of it, but it's a lot of white guilt industrial complex where, yep. Oh, no, this guy's empowered and he should do whatever he can to get over on the bosses. It's the same as why we want athletes talking out about everything that they honestly don't know as much as we presume they do about, because we're fighting against that whole, you know, dumb black jock stereotype where it's just like, no, these guys actually are very eloquent and educated and involved. And it's just like, okay, come on. Now we're overcorrecting.
Yeah.
Where we can't just say, hey, you know, this guy is a person. He has other interests. He has other passions and he contributes his voice to things where he can, instead of like, oh, this is what makes our league great. Come on, man. There's degrees.
Well, that's true. That's modern urban liberal society in 2020, and we're all guilty of it because we all live in cities. But it's just the overcorrection to like, but maybe we should think about this just a little more.
Well, I mean,
than thinking we're fighting like a 1960s civil rights movement.
but to me, it's like. It's like, yeah, you say all this shit online, and it's like the moment you walk outside, like, you don't even have a black friend. You walk across the street, you walk to the other side of the street. Like, what the fuck are we doing here? It's, like, no, I'm serious. Like,
it's
what
goofy. Are we doing? It drives me nuts. And I don't know. Personally.
Not even black. I'm fucking Asian. But, like, I could see it. Like,
yes. I mean, like, it's because it's very self-evident to, like, any honest thinking person what's going on. And I don't mean that just because I'm right. It's just because, like, we've been doing it for too long in the same way where there's no mystery to the shit anymore. I'm disappointed in the whites. I don't know what to say.
Well, I mean, you'll always be disappointed, I guess. I don't see that one changing.
Society has hundreds of years of
that. But I mean, now that we're here, like, that is part of the problem. When we just talk about black players through a white lens to mostly white people, then this is what happens.
Well, it's I don't even know what the right word for it is, but it's like it's like a weaponized empathy almost, where it's like they're trying so hard to like show that they're one of the good ones. It's like, at what point are we? Well, you're suspending any sort of just cognitive ability or just any sort of nuanced thought to Sam's, just like virtue signal.
Sam is describing the guy in Get Out, the dad in Get Out. You know, if I could, I would.
I would have voted for Obama. Yeah,
yeah, for a third term. That one had me going. That one was. That's some special stuff right there.
I don't understand so much of it. Just when you look at like the way that people literally talk online, where it's just, you know, so much of it is like just this Negro shorthand that like, I know you don't use. Why are you doing this now? Don't tell me who be like.
Are you talking about every team account?
Yes. Or like even the fact that like, how often do I have to see what somebody's wearing, whether it's their clothes or their shoes? It's like, first of all, if I really care about fashion like that, I'm going to go to a more reliable and reputable source where I've already heard about this shit. But more importantly, like the average viewer doesn't fucking care and can't afford it. So like, why are you constantly bombarding me with this fucking goofiness? And the whole subtext is it like, black guys are cool. And it's like, okay, now what? Like, what am I supposed to do with that information?
And it also gets to, like you said, like, everyone's trying to fill every lane. I'm like, just fill your lane well. I don't need you to be my go-to source for, like, basketball, politics, fashion, and, and like, literature or whatever else interest you have. Like, that's humans in a nutshell, but it's also, like, it's exceptionally funny when you see it from brands trying to be multifaceted like
that. Yeah, because, I mean, that's, like, half my job is just, like, trying not to be fucking corny. Every day. But that's just a byproduct, again, of the medium where, like, one, we reward attention seeking, and two, like, we are never satisfied. Like, we just have a bottomless appetite for bullshit. So then you're going to end up with a lot of it.
So do you ever just throw it in and be like, you know what, this is corny, but,
no, but
I will get a raise?
Because, like, well, I mean, are we talking about me, like, on Twitter.com or me at my job?
At your job. You said your job.
Oh, well, no. Because, fortunately, okay, there's a system of checks and balances of, like, people with tastes that I have to answer to where I can't just press send and hope for the retweets, you know? It's like, I have to sell my boss. I have to sell the client. I have to sell the director. I have to sell the talent, you know? Like, everybody has to think, yeah, this is a good idea. Let's go do this.
Is there a better PR machine than LeBron James?
I mean, it's complicated, right? Because part of what makes LeBron James such a PR machine is that he has so many people working on his behalf, like ESPN. And, you know, because whether it's because it's a mutually beneficial relationship or he's blackmailing somebody, who fucking knows? Who cares? The end result is the end result where it's all LeBron all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we can give him all the credit for that, but I do know the one thing that I always do give him credit for is 2015. Like, that was the hard one. When you left Cleveland to go to Miami and you had to deal with all of, you know, the stuff that came from that, I'm sure that was hard. And you didn't see it coming. But by that point in 2015, where he saw the wheels were falling off of the thing that he went over to, he was smart enough to go back. Not only because, hey, I have a better team around me that, you know, suits my capabilities at this point in my career, but I'm not going to win 6 rings. I'm just not. But what I can do is I can write a better story.
Yeah.
And going back to Cleveland and winning a championship for my hometown after the way that I left them, boom. That's worth 2-3 narratives worth of championships right there, especially considering the way that he did it. So yeah. There's lots of things that, like, he is particularly savvy about, but I think it's just because there are things available to utilize that other guys just didn't fucking have.
I mean, I think that's great, because to me, it's like, to me, I see KD kind of want to follow some of the paths that he's done, and it's just like, it's not the same. It's so different. I don't know if it's organic, but it's just, I mean, he's probably LeBron's probably what, the smartest guy in the league on and off the court. I mean, in terms of players, like, I would say, like,
I mean,
one of probably the best player in the past decade. So it's like, shit.
Because that's the thing, though, is, I mean, I don't know what kind of credit to give a guy like that, because a lot of it is just by the nature of his position, you know, where if you are that famous, that powerful, this much is riding on your back, then you get to make decisions that may look genius, but it's only because they're available to you when they weren't to anyone else. You know, it's not like he's doing things no one ever thought of. He's just doing shit that nobody else could.
Yeah.
So is that smart or is that just advantageous? Yeah. Is it opportunistic?
But he's also got the personality for it, or just the temperament for it. I think that's the key divide between him and KD.
He wants the spotlight.
Yeah, KD. I don't even know.
I don't even know if KD wants it. I don't even know if KD knows if he wants it.
KD wants the reverence that his peers have for Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
And he deserves it in terms of his talent level basketball wise. Like, but I think he kind of misses. His peers have that reverence for Kobe, not because of a lot more to do with like his work ethic than how gifted he was as a player. Or I don't know. It seems like a mix of that. But like,
I mean, if KD had come back from that Achilles or that calf injury and won Finals MVP, comes back from 3-1, he gets there probably.
He might get it coming back from Achilles. Literally, no one's come back from Achilles and been great. And if there's one player who could, it probably would be him.
I think he'll be fine physically, but I think mentally and emotionally, he's still going to be the same guy where he's closer to Kawhi than he is to LeBron. I want to do my job, and I want to go home. I want to be respected for the way that I do my job by my peers and by the fans, and I want to be left alone. I want to be treated like a regular guy. And that's just not how the shit works. At least not when you're playing at the level that he is, where you know you are a top 2-3 player in a league of the 300 best guys in the world. There's more to it than that. You have to be the pitchman. You have to be, you know, the social conscience. You have to be so many other things that have to do with shit that you just don't like doing.
But do you have to be that, or is that something that LeBron's pivoted to? Because I don't remember Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan being the social conscience of the league.
Well, I think, yeah, Michael Jordan definitely was like decidedly apolitical. But when it came time to, you know, speaking on issues in the league and about the league.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Michael Jordan was still, you know, pretty much sovereign, where, like, whatever I say, you know, is what it is. Kobe Bryant, I mean, just by the position that he put himself in, he was not allowed to be that guy for a decided amount of time.
Sure.
And then towards the end, when he did start to, you know, see the light at the end of the tunnel, I think that that's when he made a conscious decision to say, hey, you know what? Let me enjoy the ride. Let me get people to know me. And yeah, I will have opinions on other things because I'm not completely consumed with myself and with my goals.
All right. Oh, I think we should call it a show here.
Sure.
Miles, I appreciate your time. I feel like we could probably go for 4 hours.
I mean, I have nowhere else to go.
Just reopen that bottle of wine. I say, do you have something else? Do you have anything else you want to bring up? I know we've kind of gone through our rundown, but do you have anything else that you want to talk about? I ain't got shit to do either.
I mean, just how much Twitter sucks. It used to be so fun, man. Now I just dread opening that thing.
Ethan Strauss brought up a good point a few months ago, or actually a year or so ago, about how like I don't even tweet anymore. Like, from him saying this, like, I don't even tweet anymore because, like, what's the point?
Yeah.
What's the point? And he's like, and people also don't get takes off anymore. And it's like not so much a take of Steph Curry has no Finals MVP, so he's not a top 50 player in the NBA history. Not that type of take. The type of take where it's like, you know, like a legitimate take. Like, hey, James Harden probably needs to work on his mid-range jumper to become like a better offensive player in the postseason, like that type of take.
Too much nuance, boo, nigga, get out of here. Like,
not a fan of that take. Huh?
No, I mean, it's just like we haven't fostered the kind of environment to have those kind of conversations.
Right.
Where, you know, it's weird because Twitter is for everybody and it ain't for everybody. And the fact of, like, say the three of us were having this conversation in a bar, and somebody happened to chime in, you know, we could choose to ignore them. But if like 3, 4, 5 more people just jumped in and they had opinions and then they started arguing in the middle of our conversation, that's Twitter. And it's like, how can you get anything good out of that anymore?
That's I think that's good. And a lot of people have conversations just to like have it on Twitter.
Right.
Where, I mean, like it.
Go ahead.
No, it's just like there are things where it's like, yeah, you're just saying this. You're just tweeting this to someone else just so other people can see it. It's like, dude, we know the point here. Like, we know the deal. Because I started the podcast by kind of saying, like, I joined Twitter and I loved it. Like, I fucking loved it. Like, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about hoops. I learned a lot about politics. Learned a lot about, like, pretty much everything. And it was like most of the times I actually met Sam because we were able to, like, just have a conversation and talk on the timeline or, like, in the DMs or whatever. And nowadays, it's like sometimes I'll see Sam have a conversation on my timeline and he's like having a legitimate conversation.
You just text me like, what the fuck are you doing?
I legitimately text him and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why are you having like a real conversation? Nobody wants that.
Twitter is the group chat now. That's where we do what we used to do on Twitter. And it's sad because it used to be fun when we were all just kind of enjoying something rather than competing with each other. And I guess my thing is with the attention, like, people don't know what to do with it even when they get it. Like, it's always just, you know, the same hackneyed ass meme of like, yo, buy my mixtape. Like, nigga, you don't have one. You see, you got all that attention.
It's trash.
And now what? Like, that's what people don't get is like, in the end game, like, all you want is more. And so then, like, what are we doing?
What's that quote? Like, a person is rational, people are irrational, or something to the realm of, like, anytime you get people in a group, they act irrational. That's essentially what Twitter's turned into, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because there's also, like, a lot of outside, like, variables, like, just the whole political landscape, I'm sure, has made some people particularly punchy for, like, the last 3 or 4 years. Ooh. But, you know, 2016 and just the whole Durant thing and all of that shit. And then it was an election year on top of that. That's so funny. But yeah, I think that's where things went wrong. And I don't think we can make our way back.
Nah, there's no way.
There just isn't. Because
we're gonna end with one take here. Steve Kerr disagreeing with Miles. Steve Kerr was on a podcast today and he's talking about Andrew Wiggins. He was very good defensively for us. And now when Clay is back, we can match up. He's a really good passer. And that's something I didn't know until I saw him every single day. That bodes well when he's playing next to the two best shooters on earth. Kerr's going to make Wiggins a playmaker next year.
I mean, maybe he will. All I saw Andrew Wiggins do was, like, you know, send his boys to get girls out of the stands for him and play with his dog on Instagram. So, like, those are the skills that I'm familiar with. Him being in practice every day, obviously, he's privy to a lot more information than I was. So, you know, I wish young Andrew all the best.
Look, man, with Andrew Wiggins.
No one was at Chase this year, so, you know, it's no need to send anyone to stands.
Yeah, you could still get some thirst traps out there. Look, he didn't get his girl stolen by Jimmy Butler. I there is some kind of toughness with Andrew Wiggins.
I don't even know if that's true. Like, that's where
the cat rumor.
Yeah, that I feel like I didn't do my due diligence as like a. I still don't even know what you call someone from Minneapolis. Is it a Minneapolitan or some shit? Like, I have no idea. But I should have worked harder to find out if that was a true thing.
But do you want to believe it true? This is more important in 2020, not whether it's true or not. Do you want to believe it?
I don't want to believe it because my thing with Jimmy Butler has always been is that it's a righteous anger that this guy has, you know, where, hey, I work hard. I work hard to fucking keep myself in shape, to keep my skills intact, to compete. And to know the game. And when people around me aren't putting in that level of effort, then I've earned the right to call them on their bullshit. I can always ride with you on that. But when you start fucking your teammates, girl, then like, dog, like you're just an asshole. Like, I can't support that. Then, yeah, everything else that people say about you is probably true.
I can see Jimmy doing it. And I love Jimmy. But yeah, that'd be
it does really cross a line. Like, there's just. You're just an asshole. It's the best way to put it.
It's some Tony Parker shit. That'll be the
title this podcast.
Jimmy is one of our favorite love of the game. Like, we can't decide if he's love of the game or love of the fame. We can't decide, but I think he's just, he's an MVP in both.
It's both, because his love of the game produces that love of the fame. Where, you know, he's so good at loving the game that it's given him fame, and he loves that too.
That's well, he's the perfect 50-50 of both. I don't think anyone else straddles the line better.
No, I guess Kobe. I think Kobe's the GOAT. Kobe is the GOAT of the straddling of love of the fame.
I think no? he leans more into the – like, there's certainly some fame factors there, but he's – the sheer fact he waited, like, 15 years before he, like, let the world see everything in a way that was pre-produced, I think leans more towards it not being pre-produced.
I think the interesting thing about Kobe was, like, at least working in, you know, what I do now is you hear, like, how curious – and involved and like engaging he was with that kind of shit. Most of the time you get an athlete on set, like they want to leave as soon as they get there, but they still want the thing to be amazing. Like, I don't want to do anything, but I want everything. And it's like, all right, bet, thanks. Kobe was the exact opposite, where he was, you know, there early. He's asking questions. He's making suggestions. He's this, he's that. He's where you understand that that's just who that guy was. And that speaks more love of the game to me than love of the fame. Love
LeBron's of the fame is just like, LeBron's the GOAT of love of the fame. Disagree? Agree?
He's the GOAT.
Ain't nobody better.
I mean, it's just like, I understand it though. We're like, how long has this guy been covered by national media? What, since he was like 15 years old?
Since he had his Hummer, yeah.
He's 35 years old now? And I mean, it keeps getting bigger for him. Why, I could, it would warp me too. I'd be that same guy. I don't know anybody who would be different under those circumstances.
It's going to keep going. He's going to own a team. He's going to do all that. It's like, he's going to own a team and it's not going to be like MJ own a team. You know what I mean? Like MJ own a team and he's like gone now. He's like vanished.
Oh, is the prophecy where he's going to be exactly like Dan Gilbert, over-involved and making all the wrong decisions?
I mean,
minus the whole like being a kind of, what is it, like with Quicken and just kind of general scumbag with the loans?
Yeah.
Predatory loans.
I think the thing about him, like, that I think about is, like, compared to a Kobe or compared to a Jordan, which, you know, is the company that he keeps, Michael Jordan, like, you won't see that nigga for another 10 years. He gave us the moment we needed when Kobe went down. And he was, you know, he spoke up like, hey, I am the one who has to fill this void. Dope. Thanks, Mike. He goes back in the house. You won't see him again until like fucking 2035. Kobe was obviously very satisfied in what he was doing, you know? Like, he wasn't seeking the spotlight for what he was doing with his kids and his advertising or his books or whatever. It was just, hey, I need something to keep myself sharp, to keep myself going. LeBron, man, like, I don't know if he knows how to walk away like that.
No, he not. Yeah. Like, he's not going anywhere.
I don't think he wants to. I don't think he would even know what else to do if he wanted to. Like, can you name another interest of LeBron James?
No, he's going to transition from ESPN to Bravo or E.
Stop directing dramas. Steph Curry's going to be the type to retire and, like, do the Tim Duncan, where he just shows up maybe with, like,
I don't know, man. I think know. He's going to be trophy husband.
Doesn't he have that production company? Shows. He's trying to make his shit now. I don't understand why every basketball player's venture is a production company now.
So Steph has one. Is that what you're saying? He has one. He has the SC30, right? Or whatever it is.
Him, KD. There might be more. I forget. But it's just, it's weird. We're like, only LeBron can do that just by the nature of the power and the connections that he has. Nobody, I don't know. Actually, maybe there is some wholesome family content that people want to hear from the Currys.
People do love. He going to make a Christian. Is Steph Christian? What is, I forget what he is.
Yeah.
Christian content. I guess
he's not Muslim or Jewish. Come on, man.
Man, I'm nothing, so I don't know how this. I don't know how this shit works.
Yeah, no, he's just you know, he's a good God fearing man. He's got a nice family. Got what, 2.5 children. You know, got both his parents. He's just a model citizen.
He's the only athlete that don't cheat. That's all I.
Yeah, like I don't know. You guys remember like Focus on the Family Channel?
Like before my time.
Yeah, well, that was like, you know, your basic, what do you call that? Like wholesome Christian content. I could see him making a lot of shit for them. where, like, you know, he's talking with kids and doing that kind of stuff.
Look, but like, look, let's, like, think, okay, let's spin it backwards a little bit.
I think he's going the opposite way. I think he's gonna be a drill sergeant for his son, his lone son. Got to keep his legacy. Yeah,
fucking names his kid Cannon with one N.
Oh my God, I don't these names. This is why I don't have children.
Well, I think a lot of the jealousy and hatred came too from guys where it's like you look at Steph and you're like, holy shit, I guess this guy doesn't really have like, does he have? I'm not saying the guy is flawless, but it's like damn, like what.
The same thing happened to Curry that happened to Jeremy Lin. I think in a lot of ways it was the exact same thing. And dudes kind of had some lingering resentment towards him in that we think you're getting a lot of the love that you do because you don't look like us.
Yeah, Marcus has told us that one. It's hard for me and Sam to have that conversation.
Don't you feel that's also – yes, it's. I don't feel comfortable having that conversation.
Damn it. These are the only conversations I actually like.
Can we tie it back to Giannis, though? Because Giannis may look, but he doesn't have the same experience. I mean,
the experience, I think, is a big one, too.
I feel like he also gets that not in the club because he's just comes from a different background.
Well, I think the interesting thing about him is where I can't talk about it. Can this be a sidebar conversation?
We'll end the pod here.